Hello and welcome to Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper. Today's date is Friday, 19th of January, 2024. And I am Fran Frank, and today I will be leading the blue team. Let's meet our first reader.
Hello, I'm Nev Pope.
Welcome, Nev. It's nice to see you again. So, moving to this week's headlines from the Dawlish Gazette. Village to trial traffic lights. Traffic lights are to be installed on the main road in Starcross as an experiment to try to tackle congestion. The bid is the latest attempt to curb the snarl-up on the A379, which happens on a regular basis and are at their worst during the peak summer holiday months. Villagers have been split over the issue of lights, with some concern that they will have a knock-on effect on other roads. Some fear that the implications on residential roads when drivers try to avoid traffic management schemes such as lights. The trial scheme by Devon County Council is due to start on Monday, February the 12th and finish on Thursday, March the 28th. The section of the A379 through Starcross is a well-known pinch point. The narrow section of road near the pillars can cause tailbacks by restricting traffic flow, particularly during the summer months. There are narrow footways along the Strand as well. A trial was previously carried out to widen these footpaths, but this was not made permanent. County Councillor Alan Connett explained, "There have been concerns for many years about traffic through the village. The six-week trial will show whether traffic lights really would work or if they would cause difficult problems. The County Council will also be running a Have Your Say consultation so that residents can feedback their views. When traffic lights have been talked about in the past, the County Council has said that lights would need to be roughly where the spa shop is and at the train station. A trial scheme will now be able to demonstrate whether lights are a possible solution to help manage traffic through the village. News of the scheme has had a mixed reaction. One resident warned that lights would lead to more vehicles running from Cockwood through New Road, up around Brickyard Lane and then down Staplake Road, joined by more vehicles using the back lane from Kenton, also entering the village at Brickyard Lane. These would all go past the school. The resident said, when lights were used previously, it created mayhem.
I'm looking at a lovely photo of year 2 and 3 pupils who are celebrating an inspector's report. They're holding letters which spell the word flourish. And inspectors have praised Cockwood School for helping its pupils to flourish. The small village school, which has 80 pupils, was judged to have a rating of good following the latest Ofsted visit. Head of school, Alison Roper, said, "I am very proud of our entire school family, staff, pupils and governors, who work extremely hard to provide the best opportunities for our pupils, and it is fantastic that Ofsted have recognised our strengths." In the report, inspectors said, "Pupils flourish at Cockwood. Parents and carers agree that the school develops self-belief and a love of learning in their children. This supports pupils well for the next stage in their education." The inspection, which was carried out in October, recognised that Cockwood is a school that serves its local community well. Pupils are confident and considerate, enthusiastic about their education and knowledgeable about the world around them. The school encourages this through the vast array of opportunities and experiences they provide. These include pupils taking on leadership roles, residential trips, sporting events and entrepreneurial projects. As a result, pupils learn to be responsible and respectful members of their communities. The school is part of Ivy Education Trust, which is a local academy with schools situated across the Teignbridge area. Within the report, inspectors also said, younger pupils view the older pupils as positive role models. There is a whole school ethos shared by staff and pupils to expect the very best of each other. Support and encouragement is constantly on offer. Pupils meet the high expectations that the school has of their behaviour, conduct in lessons, and during social times. This ensures the school is a calm and purposeful place to be. Pupils feel safe and attend well. They are keen and successful communicators. Through the school's focus on oracy, pupils express their views and opinions adeptly.
Interesting word, that last one. Call out for teams for the Grand Rotary Quiz. Preparations are underway for Dawlish Water Rotary Club's first pub quiz of the year. Again, the Rotarians are hoping to raise another substantial amount of money for charity from the popular event. The quiz will take part on Thursday, March the 7th, with a top prize of £100 and the Heavitree Brewery Trophy for the winners, with further cash prizes to be won, including one for the largest number of players on the night. All winners will be asked to nominate their own particular charity to receive their prize money. The Grand Rotary Quiz, one of two held during the year, attracts more than 30 teams from pubs and clubs throughout most of Devon, and further afield apparently, and has raised many thousands of pounds over the years, helping to support a wide range of local charities. Rotary organiser Peter Harrison said, "The quiz is great fun and a superb community event. There are three sections in the quiz, each comprising of 60 questions on a whole range of subjects, including general knowledge, and we welcome new teams who want to join us." Further details can be had from Peter Harrison on 07678947737.
A voyeur has been jailed after he bought a spy camera from Amazon and installed it secretly in a bathroom at his Dawlish home. Paul Powell also downloaded more than 50,000 child abuse images from the dark web, and his voyeurism was only discovered when police seized and examined his computer. They found naked images of a young woman which he had filmed when she was visiting his home in Dawlish. The victim had no idea she was being filmed and was so traumatized when she found out that she's now scared to take a shower. Google searches he made on his phone showed that he had a sexual interest in underage girls, and checks on his email account showed receipts from Amazon for the purchase of the secret camera. He had transferred the images of the woman onto a desktop computer to view them, and police were able to identify them easily because they carried a date stamp and the words, "My Hidden Camera." Powell, aged 56, of Springfield Gardens, Dawlish, admitted voyeurism, three counts of making by downloading indecent images of children, and possession of prohibited and extreme images. He was jailed for 2 years and 4 months by Judge James Patrick at Exeter Crown Court, put on the sex offenders register, and made subject to a sexual harm prevention order, which would restrict his contact with children and allow police to monitor his online activity. The judge told him, "You were heavily addicted to pornography and used a number of devices to view and store images of child abuse. The voyeurism was carried out for your sexual gratification." Mr. Nigel Wraith, prosecuting, said police became aware that images and videos were being downloaded from a secure server on the dark web and traced Powell through his IP address. They raided his home in February 2022, and an initial examination of his phone and computer showed not only a huge number of illegal images, but also footage from his secret filming. In all, he had more than 50,000 images or movies depicting abuse of children, including 617 movies showing girls suffering serious sexual assaults at the hands of men. One girl was as young as 10, and others were in obvious pain or distress. Mr. Warren Robinson, defending, said, "Powell accepted he needed help and has completed a course run by the Lucy Faithful Foundation to address his addiction to child images. He's keen to go on a sex offenders course, which would only be available to him if he remained out of prison and in the community. He also has caring responsibilities for an adult son who suffers from autism."
News from the courts. An estranged husband from Dawlish has admitted assaulting his wife after bundling her into a car in Dartmouth and driving her to Stokenham. Philip Labram was banned from contacting his ex-partner Rebecca or from going anywhere near her home in Dawlish at the time of the incident in July last year. He admitted exercising controlling and coercive behaviour over her for the previous 18 months, which ended on the day of the assault in Dartmouth. Labram, 61, formerly of Dawlish, but now living in Kent, admitted controlling and coercive behaviour between January 2022 and July 2023. Assault causing actual bodily harm on July the 25th and breaching a restraining order on the same date. The restraining order was made on December the 21st, 2022, when Labram was cleared of an earlier assault on his ex-wife after she did not arrive to give any evidence. Judge David Evans adjourned sentence until next month, but told Labram that he will not receive more than 2 years in jail, which may be suspended. Mr. Nigel Wraith, prosecuting, said the assault involved Labram's ex-wife being manhandled into a car in Dartmouth, which was then driven to Stokenham. Miss Holly Gilbury, defending, said that Labram has mental health issues arising from an accident in which he suffered a head injury some years ago.
A Dawlish man has denied assaulting a woman. Ian Mitchell, 41, of Linden Road, is charged with assault causing actual bodily harm on December the 27th at an address in Saltash. Mitchell pleaded not guilty when he appeared before magistrates. He was remanded on conditional bail until the next court hearing for trial at Plymouth Magistrates on January the 23rd. The conditions are of residence, a curfew between 5 p.m. and midnight, not to contact the alleged victim, and not to enter Cornwall.
We have another article here actually about something in Star Cross. No joy for parents' bus stop plea. A request by several families living in Star Cross have asked for Devon County Council to divert a school bus route allowing for their children to travel to school by public transport, but this has been deemed not feasible. The families, who all live in the southern part of Star Cross and have children who attend Kenton Primary School, pushed for the current bus route, which travels between Kenton and Hope's Church, the temporary home of Kenton School following last year's floods, via the Strand, to be diverted through New Road. At present, the bus does stop at Starcross Railway Station, but this does not best serve the Kenton pupils, who reside in the southern part of Starcross. No pupils board or alight the Kenton School bus at Starcross train station. This train station stop has no benefit to these pupils. This time of the year, the children would get soaked, wet and cold before getting to school if they were to walk to the suggested bus stop on the other side of the village from where they all live. It is roughly a 10-minute walk from where the families reside, and Starcross Railway Station, although an easily doable distance from other people, would be more than enough for the families to get cold and wet before going to school. Alas, the other families have requested to divert the bus route proved unsuccessful, with Christopher being told that the bus company is not keen taking a detour off the main road, and that the proposed road is a difficult one to drive a bus down and will cause possible congestion. They have been informed that the parents who made this request, because of the timing, is not feasible to divert the bus from its current route, and have added that an additional stop should be asked for. In response, Devon County Council said, a number of known large community buses drive and use the requested route. If the bus were to travel via New Road, not out of its way, and still in the direction of Hope Church, it would only add a few minutes to the entire journey, helping to assist several Starcross families.
The owners of a Teignbridge holiday park have thanked firefighters for their swift action when fire broke out in a biomass unit. Crews were called to Coughton Holidays following reports of smoke coming from the facility just before New Year. The owners of the park say the incident originated from a delivery of wood chips, and they say they are carrying out a thorough review of facilities. A spokesman explained, staff had noticed the smoke from the wood chip pit, and as they had no indication of a clear source of ignition, called 999. The cause of the fire was later found to be friction in screw augers used to move the material which had caused the smouldering. Dawlish, Middlemore and Danes Castle fire stations were quick to respond when the alarm was raised. Coughton director Chris Jeffrey said the crews efficiently managed the situation, ensuring an effective resolution with no collateral damage. Their swift action and technology use were crucial in averting a more significant crisis. In response to this incident, we're thoroughly reviewing our facilities to enhance safety and prevent future occurrences. We remain dedicated to maintaining high safety standards in all our operations. We extend our gratitude to the fire brigade for their prompt and effective response, ensuring the safety of our facilities and guests. The park says it is committed to renewable energy, and the biomass plant is a key element which heats the pools, toilets, showers and main complex, significantly reducing our reliance on fossil fuels.
Now an item from the sports page. New Year brings new colours. There was a large group of Dawlish coasters at the First Chance 10K last Sunday for the launch of the club's new kit. It is a fast, flat course with good personal best potential. Results for the club included Gary Edwards, who came in 83rd position, who was the first coaster home, followed by Charles Edmonds, Jade King, and Sarah Edmonds.
Five Holden Trail runners competed in two races at the weekend. Saturday saw Miriam McDowell and Simon Bunday do the Tough Endurance Life North Cornwall Half Marathon. I think that must be my nephew. He runs Endurance Life. Miriam was the second female and 24th overall in 2 minutes 18 seconds, 18.4 seconds. And Simon was 89th overall and the first male vet, 60, I assume that's 60 plus, in 2 minutes 54. The following day, three club members took part in the Oh My Obelisk multi-terrain half marathon, which started and finished in Dawlish. Angus Mentor led the club home in 13th place in 1 minute Is that 1 minute? It's 1 hour, isn't it?
So I'm sorry, folks.
I've got all those timings wrong. 1 hour, 38 minutes, 47 seconds. And Anthea Board was 66th in 2 hours and 1 minute, 53 seconds. Sam Broad was 98th in 2 hours, 15 minutes and 1 second. Sorry about that with my timing.
And the last one from the sports page this time. Andrew books spot in finals. Although we are only a relatively small club, we all have big hearts at Dawlish Indoor Bowls Club. Well done, Andrew Moore, for reaching the final stages of the England Under-25s finals at the tender age of 17. Also, warmest congratulations to other members Tina Rowe and Chris Swain for achieving their Level 1 coaching qualification, which entitles them to coach newcomers to the sport. What they have both achieved is not only inspirational, but aspirational. This new blood guided in the right direction will produce the stars of the future. If you fancy having a go at a fascinating sport during the cold winter months, simply click onto dawlishindoorbowls.com to find out more. There's a picture of Andrew looking very confident, I have to say. Right, the following letters have appeared in the paper this week. The first one comes from John Wilkinson of Dawlish. I have been following the erosion of the dunes and the movement of the beach at Dawlish Warren since about 2005. In my opinion, the long-term future of this location is currently not looking good. There are many reasons why Dawlish should be concerned. It is important to consider where Shutterton Brook enters the River Exe at Eels Dock, Warren Road. Should the end of the sand split be lost, this, I believe, would inevitably increase tide heights and speed in the Exe, plus making it vulnerable to storm surges. All or any of these will increase the tidal lock, thereby putting extra pressure on flooding issues in the area. These speeds and tidal heights will impact the residents and businesses in villages and hamlets on both sides of the Lower Exe, and they should be expressing concern. Developers frequently refer to Dawlish as being well connected. This would not be the case should the railway at Powderham Bank fail, or for that matter, any part of the sea wall be damaged. The next letter comes from John Clatworthy, also of Dawlish. Dear Editor, it was good to read that Labour will be fighting the next general election in Newton Abbott, notwithstanding the comments made by the Lib Dems in a recent edition of the Gazette. I can remember in 2001 when the leader of the Lib Dems, Charles Kennedy, asked them to lend their votes to defeat Patrick Nicholls, which let Richard Younger Ross in. Clearly, this will not be happening this time, which is right for voters. It was also good to hear they will not be making personal attacks on other candidates or presenting dodgy statistics. It is often forgotten what Harold Macmillan said, that it is events which cause problems for politicians. The current leader of the Lib Dems has a problem with the Horizon IT system, having held the post of Minister of Postal Services in the coalition government, and it will be interesting to see if he falls on his sword, as he has delighted in calling on other public figures to do so. One sub-postmistress said he should look at himself in the mirror. In the meantime, it is the Lib Dems who run Teignbridge District Council and remove the 30-minute free parking period in the Strand, off-street parking, where benefits both residents and traders, and I wonder whether any of the Dawlish Lib Dem councillors tried to retain the free period. He has a few points there, I think. Right, here are the obituaries from this week's paper. Very sad one here, although all obituaries are sad, but we have a report here about Tony and Lynn Hodgson. The family are sad to announce that both Tony and Lynn have passed away. Tony died on 29th of December 2023, aged 87 years, and Lynn passed away on 8th of January 2024, aged 86. A celebration of their lives will take place at Torquay Crematorium on January the 26th at 10:30. Family flowers only, but donations can go to the Royal British Legion. William Kerr passed peacefully away at home on 4th of January 2024, aged 99. Funeral service will be held on Monday, 22nd of January, 4:30 p.m. at Torquay Crematorium. Welcome to our second team of readers.
Hi, it's Mo Hutchings.
Hello, I'm Janet Bates.
Welcome, Mo and Janet. Nice to see you again. Right, moving on to the Tynmouth newspaper. The headline this week is Last Roll of Dice to Save Hospital. It is how those campaigning to save Tynmouth Hospital have described the actions of councillors seeking to secure a second referral to save the hospital. Campaigners are urging supporters to join them again at County Hall in Exeter in a protest against the closure of the historic hospital, the first NHS hospital to be built in the country. They will be out in force at another meeting of Devon County Council's Health and Adult Care Scrutiny Committee on Wednesday, January the 24th, which will decide whether there is sufficient evidence to refer the proposed closure of Tynmouth Community Hospital back to the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, on the grounds that the decision is not in the best interests of the health service for the local population. Ardent campaigner Geraldine Arthurs said, "Many of you will be aware that this is the last roll of the dice to save our hospital, because at the end of January, all health authorities lose the privilege of referring the proposed closure of their hospitals to the Security of State. 10 years ago, we were asked by the Clinical Commissioning Group to keep an open mind over their vision for our health and well-being. Some of us were sceptical that by closing the X-ray department, transferring the minor injury unit to Dawlish, and only retaining 12 rehabilitation beds, this would secure the long-term future of Tynmouth Community Hospital. Sadly, 6 years ago, the CCG reneged on its original public consultation by removing all the inpatient beds, claiming that the new model of care was so effective that the trust could look after four times as many patients in their own homes. Geraldine said they had asked for research-based evidence which had been claimed to back that statement, especially as this is required when major health service provision is to be altered or removed. But, she said, the research produced did not compare home-based care with inpatient care. Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust, 7 years on, has not been able to provide us with any evidence for the efficacy of its model of care. This is extremely worrying because with an increasing population, many elderly, common sense would start that we need more health service provision, not less. Tynmouth needs to retain its hospital and provide a health and well-being centre for its residents to ensure that the health service provision for our area is future-proofed. We have fought this battle because the proposal to close Tynmouth Community Hospital makes no health or economic sense. We have done all we can, and we are grateful to our town, parish, and district councils for supporting us. It is an uphill struggle, as no hospital has received 2 referrals, but if there is a large presence from the public, DCC councillors will realise that people genuinely care about our NHS and want it to become the envy of the world. If we all work together, this would be possible. Meanwhile, Tynmouth District and County Councillor David Cox appealed for supporters to join in the demonstration. Speaking at a meeting of Teignbridge Council's full council, he urged fellow members to reinforce the authority's commitment to the hospital. He reminded members that the council had previously voted unanimously against closure.
My first article is headed "New Reading Scheme Aimed at Adults Comes to Tynmouth." A reading initiative to help adults with learning to read has been launched in Tynmouth. Torbay-based Easy Read has now spread to the seaside town as part of a wider scheme to improve literacy. Mayor of Tynmouth Joan Atkins was invited by the Rotary Club of Tynmouth to officially open the campaign in the town at its first meeting of the year. Read Easy Torbay team leader Anne Taylor outlined the work of the charity, providing free one-to-one coaching to teach adults to read or improve their reading ability. She explained that wanting to read to their children and grandchildren was a big incentive for adults to decide to learn. There is a need to spread the message so those in need of help can get in touch. She said, "We also need to reach people in our community who think they would have what it takes to be one of our coaches or work in one of our other roles such as fundraising or publicity. We're all volunteers but work to rigorous professional standards." Councillor Atkins was especially interested in the work of Read Easy because of her previous experience supporting learners with poor literacy. She highlighted the importance of Read Easy working one-to-one with adults to tailor support for their individual needs. Rotary President Nicola Burgess gave first-hand experience of the importance of reading at all ages through her Child Minding Company. Read Easy Torbay is currently working with around 20 reading pairs. Most pairs meet twice a week in local venues such as libraries. All volunteers are thoroughly vetted and given the necessary training before being teamed up with a person who they will coach, which can last from 6 months to 2 years, until the reader achieves their desired level of reading.
Brutal attack on pensioners. A man in his 70s suffered serious injuries after being attacked in Tynmouth on Saturday. Police are investigating reports of the assault described by witnesses as brutal. It happened on Saturday evening on the promenade just after 9 p.m. The man is said to have been assaulted by another man before at least 2 other men joined in. The victim fell to the floor where he was repeatedly hit again by the group. Police are now appealing for witnesses to the assault. A group of people who were nearby tried to help and step in to stop the attack. They also called 999 asking for help from police, but the culprits had fled the scene before officers arrived. The victim was taken to hospital for treatment for his injuries, which police have described as serious. A witness said it was a brutal attack. He said there were 2 pensioners who were targeted while outside of their camper van, which was parked near the pier. The witness told the Tynmouth Post, "A group of youths punched the old man to the ground and repeatedly punched him in the face, while 2 others repeatedly kicked him in the body. The woman was punched to the ground while calling the police. A dog walker and his son came to their rescue and intervened. 2 old age pensioners who have worked all their lives and who are wanting to enjoy their retirement years by visiting seaside towns should not be subjected to this sort of treatment by thugs. Anyone with information is asked to contact police on 101.
I've got an article from the In My View series from Teignbridge leader Councillor Martin Wrigley, which is headed The Loss of Hospitals and Increase in Potholes. Looking at the state of the NHS, the last thing most of us would say is that we have too many hospitals. Devon has an older than average population and a lower than average number of hospital beds. Our ambulance service has to deal with longer distances, country lanes, and fewer hospitals to take people to. In the last year or so, Herculean efforts have been made to reduce ambulance queues, but it's still happening. The BBC reported on January the 5th that NHS data showed that in December, Torbay and South Devon NHS Trust had the fourth worst ambulance handover delays in England, with 57% of patients waiting more than 30 minutes. Meanwhile, in Teignmouth, the pre-COVID plan of closing Teignmouth Hospital is still on the cards. No one suggests that Teignmouth doesn't need a new GP surgery, but that shouldn't mean that we close the town's hospital. Councillor David Cox and I and many others have been working for years to get this decision reviewed. At Devon County Council, in under 2 weeks, we have the last chance to save Teignmouth Hospital. A meeting of the Health and Adult Social Care Scrutiny Committee will consider the evidence and consider whether to refer the closure to the Secretary of State. It all sounds very obscure, but this is the last opportunity to save the hospital from closure. All across Devon, we have lost too many of our cottage hospitals. Cottage hospitals fill a need to have a local place close to patients' homes, where there are services and often convalescent beds that allow people to transition home. Now, I think most agree that being at home is the best place to recover, but that isn't always possible for everyone. Teignmouth Hospital was the first purpose-built NHS hospital and has served the people of Teignmouth and surrounds for a good number of years. Without it, locals would need to go further afield, to the Urgent Treatment Centre in Newton Abbot or to the Dawlish Minor Injuries Unit, except the MIU is still shut and the UTC is too often full to capacity and closed for new patients. And so more people and ambulances will be waiting in accident and emergency in Torbay or Exeter. I was told by a local resident the other day that the road in Teignmouth had more holes than the golf course, which is probably correct. But as we go from a series of flood and torrential rain, we look to a spell of icy cold weather, just the right conditions to make the potholes worse. All of this is from underfunding from central government and Devon County Council in maintaining our roads. In April last year, the County Council condemned the minor road network to gradually deteriorate. Country lanes left to deteriorate to use by tractors only, and even the A roads are just maintaining a steady state. If you agree that the state of the roads is not good enough, please join us and sign the online petition to get more investment in our road network. Make it usable without damaging vehicles and keep Devon moving.
Right, this is one from Court Briefs. Attempted murder charge. A Teignmouth man has been charged with attempted murder. Kia Dore, 29, of Nelson Close, is accused of attempting to murder an individual described as aged 1 year or over on January the 8th at Higher Brimley Road. Dore was also charged with possessing a knife blade or sharp pointed article, namely a kitchen knife, in a public place. On January the 8th, Dore is accused of possessing a knife without good reason or lawful authority at Higher Brimley Road. Magistrates remanded Dore in custody to appear at Exeter Crown Court on February the 8th for a plea and trial preparation hearing.
Shaldon Zoo offers hope for endangered Vietnamese civets. In the heart of the Vietnamese jungle lives an elusive but astonishing animal known as the Austin's civet. This curious yet endangered animal can only be seen in the jungles of Vietnam, Laos and southern China. Failing that, you can see them at Shaldon Zoo, one of only three zoos outside of Vietnam that keep them. Over the past years, Shaldon Zoo has been working closely with a Vietnamese charity called Save Vietnam's Wildlife to protect Austin civets and try to boost their dwindling numbers. Towards the end of last year, Zach Shawl, director of Shaldon Zoo and the European Breeding Programme coordinator for Austin civets, went out to Pumat National Park to help in the struggle to keep this astonishing creature in the wild. They kind of looked like they were drawn by a child, said Zach, kind of like a furry dinosaur. They're also nocturnal, so not always the easiest or greatest animal to show at a zoo. As the breeding program coordinator for Austin Civets, Zach works closely with the two other zoos that house them, both in England, but he also collaborates closely with Vietnam's breeding programs as well. Zach said, "I essentially look at the population, who's related to who, which animal will be a good genetic match, and make recommendations to move those animals to and from different zoos. We're essentially a matchmaking service." Matchmaking service for civets, that's different. There we go. Shoreden Zoo first started spearheading the conservation program for Austin Civets 20 years ago, when Stuart Muir, the zoo's founder, responded to a call for help from Save Vietnam's Wildlife. Zach explained, "Shoreden Zoo has always liked to work with small-scale projects and lesser-known species. We aren't big enough to have the lions and tigers, but smaller, less-known species need our help as well, and Shoreden can offer that. Considered an endangered animal, Austin civets have all but disappeared from Vietnam's lowlands and now primarily inhabit more mountainous and inaccessible areas of the country. The main threats to civets are deforestation, being caught and sold into the pet trade, and being snared accidentally by people trying to catch food such as deer. Alongside working hard on the European breeding program, Zach went out to work directly with the Save Vietnam's Wildlife at the end of last month. He explained, "Emails are great, but there's nothing like actually going around, sitting around a table, and working together directly. It re-energizes and re-enthuses everybody. My day-to-day work involved going to rescue centers, sharing knowledge, and working with the staff. I met Ty, who was the director of Save Vietnam's Wildlife, and discussed our conservation work. I met with their head keeper and rescue team that are working with the rescued civets. I watched some of their veterinary procedures with the vet team as well. We were very fortunate in that we went late one night to watch some of the night feeds. It was really all about knowledge sharing." The entire time, Zach was struck by the hospitality of everyone he worked with. The highlight, except for the civets themselves, were the people. They were all so hospitable, so welcoming. They wanted to show us Vietnam. They wanted to show us the best time. One of the nights we went out for dinner and Ty was there and made sure that he ordered every dish that would show off Vietnam. Save Vietnam's Wildlife have big plans for the future of civets, and Shoreden Zoo plans to play a critical role in realising its plans. Zach said, "Save Vietnam's Wildlife has started building a conservation breeding centre, aiming to house and breed Austin civets, and then release the offspring back to the wild. We're collaborating on that with them through funding and through awareness raising. We're also investigating the possibility of maybe sending some of the animals from Europe to join that breeding program in Vietnam. And we're continuing to do huge amounts of research to further understand Austin civets. If we're going to be breeding these animals to release them to the wild, we need to nail that breeding process. We have the experts and the technology here in the West, which means we can develop all these protocols, test all these things, and then share that knowledge with conservationists in Vietnam. I'm hopefully going to go out again, maybe in 3 to 4 years' time, to just continue this project moving forward and to keep doing our bit to save the species."
This is a piece on the sports section, and this is about the rugby club. 57-27 scoreline gives a true reflection of the performance of both sides on what was a bitterly cold day in Topsham, writes Paul Williams. The home side's all-action style gave the impression that they felt that the only way to keep warm was to avoid standing around waiting for things to happen. While Timmer's old failing of missed tackles saw them out of the game by half-time. There is no doubting that Topsham are a very accomplished outfit at this level, but as team's head coach Colin Stewart remarked at full time, they shouldn't be 30 points better than us. For the second week running, Stewart pointed out that several of the opposition's 8 tries were preventable, but he was also delighted that 2 late tries from Jordan Hellier ensured that his side at least came away with a bonus point. Indeed, it should be pointed out that when they had the ball, the teams did look dangerous. Their line-out and maul work was effective as ever, and the unchanged backline showed that they are starting to move the ball well. But after an early Jack Maine penalty gave them the lead, the defensive frailties were obvious as Topsham strolled through to register their first 2 tries from Henry Batty and Tom Oxland. Although Wilson Soden got his side back in the game on 13 minutes. Sadly, he had to come off shortly afterwards after showing his teammates how to tackle effectively and receiving a head injury in the process. The home side took full advantage, with Batty adding two tries and Ethan Barnshun another before the interval, and the game was as good as over, with Topsham leading 33-10. Blimey. The Tanes rallied early in the second half with a try from Jack Bowen, but any thoughts of a famous comeback were soon squashed with a penalty and two tries from the home side. But to give the visitors their due, they stuck to their task and were rewarded with Hellier's brace, which sandwiched Topsham's final try. The Tanes now take a break from league action for a week before welcoming Truro to Bitton Park on January the 27th.
So, from rugby to rowing, which I think was even colder. There we go. Dramatic boating battle sees spoils shared. On a crisp and sunny Saturday, the River Teen Rowing Club gig section played host to the third round of the South Devon Winter League, writes Andy Burfitt. Despite the chilly conditions, the event unfolded on the River Teen, utilising Herne Field Pavilion as the central hub for the day's festivities. Teams from Brixham, Dartmouth, Paignton, Salcombe, Yelm and Teen descended upon the venue to compete in a series of exhilarating races. The action kicked off with boats launching from Coombe Cellar's Slip, setting the stage for a day of intense competition. The first race of the day featured the junior category, with Brixham securing a strong lead from start to finish. The real battle unfolded for second and third positions, with Dart and Teen fiercely contending. Notably, 12-year-old Ethan, in his inaugural regatta, displaying remarkable tenacity, propelling Teen to a narrow second place over Dart by a mere 0.5 of a second. The novice race provided an opportunity for rowers with less than 12 months of experience to showcase their skills. Dart emerged victorious, leaving Salcombe in second and Brixham in third, demonstrating the prowess of their developing gig rowing skills. Teen fielded two boats in this event as the hosts. The novice races are hugely popular with new gig rowers, numbers growing across South Devon. The ladies' A race witnessed a closely contested battle between Salcombe, Brixham and Teen. Some Cox decisions on the boys led to Brixham's disqualification, paving the way for an exciting 1-2 finish, with Teen and Salcombe taking the top spots. In the ladies' B race, Teen continued their winning streak, leaving Salcombe and Dart to cross the finish line in a dead heat, sharing second place. An impressive performance from Teen B2 saw them in fourth place. This boat contained mostly novice rowers with just over a year's experience. The women's vets and super vets races were hotly contested, with Teen taking the lead in both categories. Yelm secured second place in the vets, while Salcombe claimed the runner-up spot in the super vets race. The super vets race was very exciting, with three of the top five crews in the world on show. As the day progressed, the men took to the water. Dart showcased their dominance in the men's A, B and vets events, securing a hat-trick of victories. Salcombe and Teen offered spirited competition, claiming second places across the board. In the final race of the day, the men's super vets, Dart completed a clean sweep of the men's events, capping off an impressive performance. The day proved to be a resounding success, marked by seamless changeovers and thrilling races. Special appreciation was extended to Coomintinhead Parish Council for facilitating the use of Herne Field Pavilion, and to the management of Coombe Cellar's Pub and Restaurant for generously providing their car park. Thanks were also given to all participating clubs for contributing to the event's success, and to the dedicated members of the River Teen Rowing Club for their invaluable efforts in organising, directing traffic, cooking and serving refreshments, umpiring, race officials and post-event clean-up.
Thank you, Mo and Janet, for that. We have one diary date for you this week. Dawlish Community Transport will be visiting Burnerville Nurseries on Tuesday, 30th of January. If you want any further details, please telephone 888 8890. Quite an easy one, that, isn't it? We are now coming to the end of this week's edition of Here and Now, recorded at our studio in Dawlish on Friday, 19th of January, 2024. We hope you have enjoyed the programme, which was brought to you by the Blue Team. Our readers today have been Nev Pope, Mo Hutchings, and Janet Bates. Copy and dispatch has been organised by Janet Bates and Mo Hutchings. The programme was produced by Chris Wall here in Dawlish, and the team leader for today has been Fran Frank. The next Here and Now recording will be on Friday, 26th of January, 2024, when it will be the turn of the Red Team to bring you the week's news. The Blue Team send you our very best wishes and hope that you have a happy birthday if you are celebrating this week. Look after yourself until next time. So now it's goodbye from everyone in the Blue Team.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.